President Obama is getting ready to unveil proposed broad changes to U.S. immigration law, potentially by the end of the summer. And the debate over comprehensive immigration reform continues to rage on. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In the debate over immigration reform, we have heard from many different guests from many different perspectives. But until today, I'm not sure that we have heard from a guest who is an undocumented immigrant. Well, we will this hour, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him about a guest who documented his life as an undocumented immigrant in a new book. And he will tell us about his experiences and his perspectives on the lives of the undocumented. And we will welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Jose Angel N., an undocumented immigrant born in Mexico. He has lived in Chicago for the past 17 years and is author of Illegal, Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we should point out that we are not using your full last name because you could get in trouble.
That's right, and I didn't use it on the book either. I mean, that's just something that I decided to do because I am not being recognized as a full human being. So this is my way of saying, you know, that I'm only half a person as it is right now.
Why do you say that?
That was my decision.
Yeah. Why do you say you're only half a person?
Well, I mean, you know, when you hear debates about calling people illegal as though we were some sort of an inferior human being, that takes a lot of your dignity away. Besides, there are many, right now there's a lot of name-calling going around. I've heard of people who want to put fences at the border and basically fry people like rats when they come, you know, when they're trying to cross, rather than talking sensibly about a solution to this problem that we're facing. People tend to polarize over this issue, and that's why I feel like, you know, you can't really be a full human person and your dignity is recognized.
Yeah. You are, though, in the country illegally.
Right. I don't have proper documentation. That's right.
Yeah. But you resent the term illegal immigrant.
I think most people do now. Most people, even, you know, most media tend to not use that term anymore because it is demeaning. And the irony of it is that, you know, the title of my book is Illegal. But it was a way to get people to open up the book and see that there's more to us than just the label. I mean, that's what people want to label us. But once you open up the book, you know, you will see inside and the human story that's behind it.
Yeah. So let's talk about that story. What brought you to the United States in the first place?
Well, I mean, like many other people, you know, over the centuries that have come to the U.S., I came because opportunity back in my home country was lacking. I was about 19. I was going to turn 20 when I came to the U.S. I had a very low education. I had only a 9th grade education from Mexico. And I knew that I did not have a future back in my home country because, you know, in order for me to be able to afford a good pair of jeans or a durable pair of shoes, I will have to save for a month or two in order for me to be able to afford it. So when you're in that kind of a situation, you start thinking that, you know, there might be other options to you. And the only option that I had was coming north, like many other people before me.
What do you say to those who would say, well, why didn't you wait your turn? Why didn't you, apply for legal immigration?
Right. Well, thank you so much for giving me that opportunity to answer that question, because I think it is really important for people to understand that that process that people allude to doesn't really exist, at least not for Mexican people. I think there's very limited numbers of visas that are available to Mexican migrant workers. Specifically, I think they're available for people who come to pick up vegetables and crops and fruits, whatever. So, and they run out within 24 hours when they're available. So it is practically impossible to get one of those visas. So that's why many people come, like I did. You cross the border and you come and you find the jobs that many people are reluctant to.
Yeah. So you crossed the border, and then what? Did you know where you were headed? How you ended up in Chicago?
Yes. Yes. I've been living here for over 20 years now, and I have family here. They've been living here for a lot longer than me. 30, 40 years. They're American citizens, and I think immigration from Mexico. People say that. People who study immigration, they say that immigration from Mexico has stopped. But for many years, that was not the case. People came during the Bracero program back in the 1940s, to help build the railroads and to help with the food production in the States during the war. So some people ended up staying in the States, and some other people kept coming back after a while, because opportunities back in Mexico, again, there were a few. So it was almost a rite of passage, to come to the States once you were like 18 or 19 years old, because the opportunities in the place where I come from are very, very few.
Yeah. So what type of work did you end up finding right off the bat?
Well, like everybody else who comes from my background, I was, first employed washing dishes, mowing lawns. I think I probably did construction for a day or two, all sorts of different menial jobs. And I've never been unemployed until recently, but we can talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, you also ended up talk a little bit about how as an undocumented immigrant you were able to find work, for instance, without presumably a social security number.
Well, I mean, that's what you do when you're undocumented. I mean, you present fictitious documentation in order for you to be able to get a job. And I know that may sound like a controversial idea, but that is the reality of millions and millions of people who have been contributing to the economy, by the way. There's, I was just reading this article about the contributions of the undocumented population in the States for the past 10 years. And this person from the Social Security Administration is saying that we have paid about $100 billion over the last 10 years. And that's money that we're not getting back. In fact, I every year for almost the last two decades, I've been getting a letter from the Social Security Administration at the end of every year, saying that the money that's been retained from my paycheck, part of that money going to some sort of a retirement fund, or I can't remember where it is. That money is not going to be given back to me until my paper situation is solved, until I get my paper straight. And that's not something that we think about a lot, because, you live paycheck by paycheck and you depend on that. And retirement is not a concept that we understand very well. That is not something that we think about constantly. But I was surprised during the debate last year about immigration, when the Senate passed a bill saying that all that money that we have put into Social Security fund, we're not going to get it back. It doesn't matter how long you have worked, 10, 15, 20 years, like in my case, that's not money that you are going to be able to recover. So, I mean, I'm just saying that because I know there are many people who think that we don't pay taxes, that we don't contribute to the economy, but the reality is otherwise.
Yeah. But what about the argument that you're a lot of illegal, undocumented immigrants who are in the country illegally are sucking off the system, are using, you know, health services, education services, welfare services when you know, citizens of this country may not even be able to have access to those things?
Right, right. Well, again, you know, there are contributions that we are making to this country. We're paying taxes, and we're not getting that money back the way American citizens are. And I don't really know. I'm not an economist. I don't know how they where that money goes. I like to know where it goes. But, you know, that is our contribution, and we don't get it back. I don't know if it goes to fund public schools or whatnot. But, I mean, like, right now with the Affordable Care Act, I don't have access to health care. I haven't had access to health care for a long time since I left my job about 3 years ago. So it is not true that we suck up the system. We put in to the system, and we don't get it back. I think it was back in 1994 when President Bill Clinton actually put an end to people being able to get food stamps or some sort of social benefit that affected millions of families, and not only undocumented immigrants, but also American families. So I, you know, when people talk about that kind of thing, it's just puzzling to me to hear it, because I've never received any public aid at all.
We'll talk about what else life was like for our guest, Jose Angel, who is the author of Illegal, Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. In just a moment, we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about what life is like for an undocumented immigrant. Our guest, who has lived in Chicago for more than 20 years now and is the author of Illegal, Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. His first name is Jose, why did you decide to write about your life and your reflections when, you know, conceivably you could get into some trouble?
Right. Well, when I first started writing about, you know, my life as an undocumented immigrant was because I become very isolated from friends. That was when I first got my job as a professional translator, and the people I was working with, you know, they had no clue. They had no clue whatsoever that I was undocumented. And that put me in a very odd position because I moved very far away from where I used to live when I went to school, when I was working, going to college and all that. So I live on the other side of the city, and I left all my friends there, and it was difficult for me to be able to relate to people who knew nothing about what the life of an undocumented person was like. And it was a sort of, a relief for me to come home every night and start writing about this. I started writing this book. It's a sort of diary where I to think about all the things that happened to me based on the fact that I was undocumented. For instance, not being able to travel to see my family. I haven't seen my family in about 20 years. Not being able to get a bottle of wine like a regular person. Not being able to go to a bar with co-workers when they invited me for a drink. So all of those kinds of things gave me a lot of material to think and write about.
Yeah, why couldn't you go get a drink at a bar with your friends?
Well, because I didn't, and I don't have proper documentation. And when you go into a bar, you're usually carded. And if I were to go with my coworkers, who were the friends I had at the moment, and I showed my matricula, which is the Mexican consular ID that I have as an identification now, you know, they will immediately ask me, why don't you have a driver's license? Why don't you have a state ID? Or if I were to show my Mexican passport, you know, they'd be curious, why don't you just show, you know, state ID instead of bringing your passport? And maybe they'd be even curious about looking at my passport to see what countries I've been to, which are none other than the States and Mexico. And, you know, all the things that I've been working for the past 15, 17 years, and, you know, until I got that job, you know, I will be at a risk of losing all that because they will find out that I was undocumented. So that's why I always declined the, you know, invitations to go out with friends to a bar. The only time that I, you know, hang out with them was when they had parties at their houses or when I had them over.
Yeah, and did you ever get a driver's license? You did have a driver's license for some time, but then...
I did. Mm-hmm. I did. It expired. It expired, and I could not renew it because of the... I can't remember what the name of the law was.
Real ID, I think, changed that.
Real ID Act. That's right. That's right. 2006. You know, my social security number is not valid. It is valid for me to be able to pay taxes, but it's not valid for me to renew my license. So I cannot renew my license, my driver's license, and I cannot go out anymore with friends because I did not have a proper ID.
Yeah, and but you were able to go to school. You were able to attend college, and you got a degree in philosophy. How hard was that process without documentation?
You have to provide a social security number, which I provided. But then I paid my way through school. I paid my tuition. I made my way through college, you know, washing dishes and cleaning tables and whatnot. And, you know, I never got any financial aid or anything. It never occurred to me that I could apply for it. So I worked in order for me to go to school. You know, it became an ambition of my life to be able to obtain university education because no one in my family had ever gone to college, not even to high school. I mean, I left school when I was 13 in Mexico. Didn't go back until much later when I came to the States at about 21 and I started, you know, taking ESL classes, and I found out eventually that I could take classes to be able to prepare for the GED, which I also took, and but it took a lot of work. I mean, it took at least 3 tries for me to be able to pass it and then go on to college. I didn't go to college until many years later, 4 or 5 years later, but that's how it happened. I mean, I did pay my way to college.
And you then obtained employment as a professional translator?
Yes, yes, eventually. Eventually, many years later, I obtained an employment as a professional translator. And, you know, I had that job for about 5 years, and then I lost it.
You know, what happened?
There was one day, you know, that I was fearing since the very first day I started to work. I knew that eventually I would be found out. And there was a day when a letter Well, an email came and he told me that I needed to clarify this problem with my social security number. And I knew, you know, that right at that moment I had to leave. So the next day, you know, I submitted my letter of resignation and left. Never going back to work.
Yeah. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Jose Angel, who is an undocumented immigrant who was born in Mexico, came to this country when he was about 20 years old. He has now lived in Chicago for the past 20 years, and he writes about his life here, his experiences as an undocumented immigrant in the book Illegal. We welcome your questions for him. We welcome any views you have on the immigration reform debate. We'll get Jose to weigh in on that as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, let's take a call from Lou in Cudahy. Hi, Lou.
Hello. It's amazing. You people must endorse Wisconsin Public Radio, the breaking of the rule of law. That's what I see is going on in the U.S. border with Mexico. When you don't have a border, you don't have a country. A collapse of the rule of law is everywhere. And also terrorists who are coming across the U.S.-Mexican border, they're finding Muslim prayer shawls on the ground there, and it looks like we have Yemeni and Syrian terrorists coming across. Wages are dropping here in Wisconsin. There was just a report the other day about that. And these people, he just said he had to buy a Social Security number. That means the Social Security number was stolen, and the rightful owner of the name, well, the number, is not going to get paid their Social Security benefits. It's probably stolen from a child.
All right, Lou, you gave us a lot of your ammunition. Let's see what Jose has to say about this. Do you know about that? I mean, you stole someone's Social Security number, he says?
No, I did not steal a Social Security number. I mean, I think that's the argument many people make. I bought a fictitious Social Security number. It's not somebody else's, as far as I know. And I've been paying taxes with it rather than taking anything away. So I'm not sure what the caller is referring to, and also all those things that he's saying about terrorists dropping parachutes at the border. I don't know. It's difficult for me to be able to wrap my head around an idea like that.
Let's talk about border security. Lou and many others think that the border is not secure enough between the U.S. and Mexico, and believe that that we shouldn't be having people who do not have the proper documentation crossing over and ignoring the rule of law. What is your response to that?
Right. Well, as I was saying earlier, Joy, there isn't a clear process in order for people to be able to come and do the job that many people don't want to do in the States. I mean, back in the 1990s, there were about 500 people or more dying every year just trying to cross the border in order to come and pick up tomatoes and oranges and strawberries. You know, these are jobs that people don't want to do, and people die to be able to just come and do that job for them. So it's really confusing for me when I hear the rhetoric saying that, you know, the border is not secure enough. I invite people to take a look at what Republicans were saying back in 1980. There was a debate between George Bush and Ronald Reagan about the border. This very debate that we're having at this moment, they were having it back then. And just check it out on YouTube, the ideas that they had. I mean, they were more liberal than Obama. They were simply saying, you know, we have this problem. We need a solution for it. Let's document the people. Let's have them go back and forth as they see fit, as long as we can know who they are as long as they pay taxes. We don't need to make labor illegal, which is what has happened. So this is what the problem is right now.
Is the undocumented labor lowering the wages of everyone in this country, according to Lou, it is?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think it was in one of the southern states. I don't know if it was Georgia or where. Back in about 2002 or 6, people were being deported left and right. And what happened was that there was a labor shortage. And the idea that some people came up with was to take some people out of prison to be able to do the job that people who were being deported had been doing before. And you know what happened? When they were taken to the field, they worked for an hour, and then they said, you know what, this is not for me. I'm not going to do this job. They didn't have to. I mean, you know, being Americans, you don't have to do a job that you don't want. But when you are an undocumented immigrant, you will do it because that's the only opportunity that you have. And as far as, you know, lowering the salaries are concerned, I don't know. I hear that a lot. But many of the people who say that are the very same people who oppose raising the minimum wage to $10 an hour.
Let's take another call from Ken. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't get Ken. Let's go to Ken in Platteville. Hi, Ken. Go ahead. You're on the air. Oops, I'm sorry, Ken. Go ahead now. I think I'm going to be able to do this properly. Ken, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I've truly feel for the young children that across the border that are in dire straits, but I really have very little sympathy for adults who have come across the border illegally. Last year, I spent over $3,000 trying to help a young person from Southeast Asia come to Wisconsin to attend a second English school, certified second English school in Madison. She had been working full-time as a secretary at a very large car dealership. She studied 5 nights a week English, and on weekends studied computer programming languages. Extremely hard-working, and she was turned down equivocally. I guaranteed all expenses, provided a safe place with her countrymen to stay, and guaranteed her expense and her return.
Can we get it? So you think that the undocumented immigrants from Mexico are the reason why your student from Southeast Asia was turned down?
My understanding is that in general, because we've got so many undocumented immigrants in the U.S., that they almost automatically turn down anyone. And why should someone be able to come across the border totally illegally when this person and her family did everything 100% legally? The proper documentation, the proper tracking numbers, the proper guarantees to return back to Southeast Asia, where they would improve their economic well-being by improving English for their international trade. It is in no way fair that these people are able to come across illegally when some try to do everything totally legal, and are denied.
Yeah. So what's your response to that, Jose?
Right. Well, I feel bad that he had spent so much money on trying to get a student here to better her or his English. And and it is something that I understand and I can relate to. My whole family is back in Mexico still. And when my mom and my grandmother were trying to get a visa to the legal channels that the gentleman was just talking about. They were denied the visa. My mother could not come to the States because she's not middle class, because she doesn't have real estate, because she doesn't have savings. She was trying to come and visit her son, who she hasn't seen in 20 years. And the same went for my grandma. You know, she's an elderly woman who was trying to come and see me as well. She applied for a visa. They will not grant her one. And you know, I had, well, as I said, I have many relatives who are American citizens, and they were willing to spawn. They were sponsoring them and saying that they were going through the same process that this gentleman was talking about, but they were not granted a visa. So, you know, we're on the same boat. I mean, I think that the visas that people give are not enough. So I understand and I feel for the gentleman.
Yeah. So what kind of immigration reform do you think this country should pass? You know, are you 100% behind President Obama's comprehensive immigration reform proposals, which generally mean a pathway to citizenship, but you do have to go to the back of the line and pay some sort of, I guess, fine? What kind of immigration reform do you think is needed?
Well, I think something that's sensible and that takes into consideration the economic needs of the country, and it also considers the humanity and the dignity of people who, you know, who have been contributing to the economy. You know, this is something that I'm going to emphasize again, because people, you know, the callers don't seem to be listening to this part of the argument, that we've been paying taxes for over 20 years. In my case, over 20 years, but there are people here who have been here for more than that, or, you know, shorter periods of time, who are also paying into the Social Security Administration and who are keeping the Social Security solvent for people who are retiring. But to answer your question, I think it's something that's sensible, that makes sense for the economy and for the people who are already here. I think that even if they were to grant work permits for people, President Obama doesn't have the authority to legalize people to give us visas. So if they were to pass some sort of a measure whereby we can obtain work permits, that will have a tremendous effect on the economy. Do you know how many million people will travel to their home countries, and how that will improve the economy in the U.S.? People who haven't seen their family in years and years will be able to travel and be with them and spend money on plane tickets and gifts that they will take back to their families. I mean, the amount of money that they will contribute to the economy will be a lot. I'm not an economist, again. I'm not an immigration expert. I can tell you from a first-hand experience, this is what's happening, and I will be the first person getting in line, you know, to go see my family and spend the little money that I have to see them. So, but if we need some sort of an immigration, if not a whole reform, some, I don't know, some measure by the president, so this can become a reality.
Let's take another call from Ken in La Crosse. Hello, Ken.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What is your thought or question?
Well, I'm a truck driver. Actually, I'm driving right now, and I around Wisconsin, and I go to factories in different places, and most of them have Mexican Americans working. I call them Mexican Americans because they're here. Just let them stay here. They pay their taxes. They buy food from stores, cars. The economy would literally shut down if they weren't here. You know, I mean. Just alone in California, where all the produce comes from, it's all Mexicans working in the fields, and I feel I agree with I agree with what he's saying and everything, and I just feel that the ones who are here grant them give them their visas, give them their Social Security numbers. Sure, you got to cut down on the border coming across. But what it boils down to, and I'm 100% American, is Americans are too lazy to work for that kind of money. And so I just say more power to him. I hope he gets his, what he's hoping for.
Are you hoping for citizenship, Jose?
Well, we'll see eventually. I don't know what will happen. I mean, I'm married. You know, my wife is an American. Her family has been here for about 200 years. We have a daughter. You know, she was born here in Chicago. And so kind of that is my instinct. You know, I have made of Chicago my... I have tried to make it my home. You know, I've been here for over 20 years. So eventually I will love the opportunity, you know, and I'm willing to wait on, you know, in line to become a citizen if that's eventually possible. You know, when they passed the Senate bill last year, they said that we will be able to get some sort of a visa, and then we'll go back to the end of the line, which will mean you will have to wait about 10, 15 years to be able to apply for your green card. But so that's the kind of, you know, way that we will have to go through if we wanted to be able to apply, yes, for a green card, not for citizenship. Citizenship will take over 20 years if the Senate bill was a reality, which may not happen anymore. You know, I think that the chances for immigration reform this year are pretty much dead.
Well, we do hear, though, that President Obama may sign some sort of executive action on immigration before the end of the summer, even. So he may not be able to sign comprehensive immigration reform into law, but he could take some action that would prevent deportations and other things. Quick thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I do hope that he does that. That will alleviate the anxiety and uncertainty of many people, like you know, myself. And I think what he's trying to do is basically, like you said, you know, stop deportations for people who are related to American-born citizens. Like, you know, being a parent of our American citizen will count. We'll see what happens. I mean, I also want to remind you that President Obama has deported over 2 million people. I mean, you know, he has broken over 2 million families over the past 6 years of his presidency. So I hope that he does it. I wrote him a letter, an open letter to President Obama that's been published on different outlets online, saying, you know, talking about this very problem. So we'll see what he does or doesn't do. You know, we know that about 150,000 children, American-born children, lose their parents to deportation every year. So I really hope that he moves on that, because it's, you know, he's breaking families apart and he's not helping out anybody. There's over 5,000 children who are in foster care now because of deportations.
We are talking with Jose Angel N., an undocumented immigrant born in Mexico who has lived in Chicago now for the past 20 years or so. He is the author of the book Illegal: Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. We are hearing about what it's like for him and others in this country who are undocumented immigrants, and getting Jose's thoughts on what he thinks should happen when it comes to immigration reform. What do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We take more of your calls now for Jose Angel, who is the author of Illegal, Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. And our next caller is John in Milwaukee. Hello, John.
Hi. I just wanted to say thanks to Jose, because he's been a big voice for a lot of people right now. And what he's saying is true. There's a lot of people, meaning look around, there's people behind kitchens, behind big restaurants, illegally working, trying to feed their families, because in our own country we cannot do it, because maybe it's too poor, or there is a lot of violence going on. I just want to say that, and I just want to say that there's also, I hope that people from Wisconsin can understand that there's poor people trying to work to feed their families, and if they split apart a family, there's going to be more people that is going to be poor.
Yeah, Jose, you want to respond to that?
Thanks a lot, John. I really appreciate your comments. I think it is really important what he just mentioned about families. I don't think anybody thinks families are broken apart are a good idea. And yet, you know, over 2 million families have been broken apart, and 1,100 people are being detained every single day to be put in prison. So that means that another family, another 1,100 families are being separated every day. You know, that creates a lot of anxiety. I've heard even, you know, we haven't even talked about the crisis at the border, which is a different topic. It's not the same. But, you know, I've heard of children who have committed suicide after their parents have been taken away, because the stress and the need and just the loneliness, it becomes too much for children to bear. And in the New York Times, there are some stories right there of children 9 years old who have committed suicide because their parents have been deported. So I don't know that splitting families is a good idea. So thank you, John, for your comments.
Yeah, well, a little bit on the crisis at the border, and the local connection here is that we do have our mayors of Madison and Milwaukee looking for places, a shelter for the undocumented, unaccompanied children that are coming to the United States or have come to the United States and crossed the border illegally. And, in fact, I think there's a story in the news that another a community maybe in Wisconsin's Fox River Valley said they did not have that shelter for the children. Talk some about, do you think that that is a part of the solution here, finding housing for the Central American undocumented children?
Yeah, I really hope it works out for them and they can find housing in some places in Wisconsin or different states. And, you know, these children are coming from what's practically a war zone. You know, gangs in El Salvador and Guatemala and Honduras, you know, they're just, they've taken over entire sections of cities. And, I think Honduras is probably the most violent country in the whole world. So children are trying to get away from that, you know. And when I see sometimes people having demonstrations at the border trying to send them back, I don't know what to think of that. I wonder if, you know, if they were children coming from Europe 100 years ago and arriving at Ellis Island, will that be happening? You know, will you have people protesting and sending them back? I mean, that's a question for people to think about. they were showing up in Ellis Island rather than the Mexican border, and if they were coming from Europe, will their response be the same?
But I'm glad to hear
that in Wisconsin they're trying to find them places to accommodate them.
Rich on Facebook says, Jose is no doubt aware of how artificial our focus is on our southern border. We are not building unclimbable fences at our Canadian border. Why? Well, in quotes, those people tend to be the right color. And glory or glories, they speak English for the most part. The United States of America's government is so hypocritical about immigration. So, do you agree with Rich?
To a point, yes. I do have to say, though, that there are undocumented Canadians in the U.S., believe it or not. But it is true. I mean, I think 40% of people who are undocumented in the U.S. come through the Mexican border, but 80% of their resources are allocated to protect the southern border. So that doesn't really make any sense that you will put more resources where fewer people come, through the place where fewer people come. But that's the reality of it. That's the reality. I mean, he's saying it, we're not the right colors and we don't speak English. But, and that's probably what many people feel as well.
So how is your experience here similar to or different from that of other undocumented immigrants? If you can give us the very short answer to that.
Yeah, well, I guess the only difference is that I went to school. I was lucky enough to be able to get my GED, learn English, get my GED, go to college, and become aware of the situation of the historical facts and what's happened over time. And that's probably the main difference between me and them. But, essentially, I'm still the same. I'm undocumented, just like 11 million people are.
Yeah. And what do you hope listeners take away from this conversation? What do you hope they take away from your book in just a minute?
Well, I think what I wanted to take away from this conversation is just to have an open mind and to listen to people, to listen to our stories, and to know that when we come, we're looking to better our lives, not to harm communities. We want to contribute to the economy. And if you look at the facts, I think that's what we've been doing.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Jose Angel N. is the author of Illegal, Reflections of an Undocumented Immigrant. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Justin Williams and to Cynthia Schuster for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I hope you join us tomorrow at this time. We will be talking with author and Away With Words founder Richard Lederer about our grammar and language pet peeves. That's tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.